You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the racial justice marches we saw around Wisconsin last summer may have dropped in size, but demonstrations are still happening almost every day. We'll talk with organizers from Milwaukee and Kenosha about the work they're still doing in their communities. Now, President-elect Biden will become president following his inauguration tomorrow. The incoming administration faces an economic downturn, the country's biggest public health crisis in a century, and a deeply divided nation. The president-elect has promised a quick response, offering a nearly $2 trillion recovery package. Biden's plans include distributing 100 million doses of coronavirus vaccine in 100 days, sending out $1,400 stimulus checks, and raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. But Biden faces a Senate that will have to juggle that agenda while simultaneously holding an impeachment trial for the outgoing president. And congressional Republicans and possibly some key Democrats are likely to push back on elements of those plans. We're digging into the early days of the Biden administration, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want President-elect Biden to focus on as soon as he gets into office? What should his immediate top priorities be? What are you most hopeful for or worried about with the new administration? What do you think of the idea of another round of stimulus checks? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Shannon Bo O'Brien is an assistant professor of instruction at the University of Texas Austin Department of Government and the author of Donald Trump and the Kayfabe Presidency, Professional Wrestling Rhetoric in the White House. Shannon, welcome back to the show.
Hi, nice to be back.
Well, I just listed some big challenges there. What do you see as, the biggest challenge facing the Biden administration when it checks into the White House tomorrow afternoon?
Honestly, I think the biggest challenge they have is the fact that they haven't really been allowed to have a lot of access to transition information. And I think when at 12 o'clock, everything changes, regardless of whoever's, that's when it switches constitutionally. And we'll see, because I don't know, and it's sort of unclear how much information Biden's actually received and how much intelligence he's gotten and how much detail he actually does have. That's what I'm waiting for, to see if plans start shifting and some of the rhetoric starts changing a little bit once they get like the full details.
Now, they'll have to work with Congress, the Biden administration, to pass a lot of their agenda items. I want to give a listen to Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin on WPR's The Morning Show. This is last week, talking about where that's going to start.
We're scheduled to come back into session on January 19th. Very shortly thereafter, the leadership of the Senate is going to change. Then it'll be up to Senator Schumer to schedule the trial, and all of us right now are very hopeful that we'll be able to both consider the trial as well as move forward on confirming Joe Biden's cabinet nominees.
So, Shannon, impeachment trial in the Senate, confirmations in the Senate, and an ambitious policy agenda from President-elect Biden for economic recovery. Can Congress tackle all that at once?
Yeah, they can. It'll be interesting, but they can do it. Over on Senate side, what's going to be interesting is with all the changes, they're going to be getting new leadership in, and they're going to be getting new committee chairs and subcommittee chairs in, along with just, Chuck Schumer coming in as majority leader. And so there's going to be a lot of people having to learn, jobs and the culture is going to change a little bit over there. And that's a challenge unto itself as well. Yeah, I think with at least what I was listening to today, with Mitch McConnell's speech, it sounds to me, and I'm originally from Kentucky, but from the way McConnell's talking, it sounds like he's not going to stand in the way of an impeachment trial, and he might be helping grease the wheels on a conviction a little bit. And if that happens, that might go very fast. And if that goes very fast, they might be moving over to policy agenda really quickly.
We are talking about the incoming Biden administration, priorities and challenges and roadblocks they may face. Shannon Bo O'Brien is with us from the University of Texas, Austin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions and what you are hoping to see or worried about. Shannon, let's get into this economic recovery plan from Joe Biden now. A good chunk of money, $1.9 trillion. Some members of Congress are already thinking they've spent enough. What stood out to you in that plan?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm actually waiting to see, like I said, when he becomes president, I'm waiting to see. A lot of times people have, it's sort of like when you go to the buffet and you see all the food and then you have to actually start putting it on your plate and you realize it's more than you can handle. That's what I'm waiting for. I'm actually waiting to see what he's wanting to actually accomplish in terms of when he actually gets in charge of stuff and sees what the government's dealing with at the moment. Like I said, I'm actually just very concerned about the fact that they haven't been included on a lot of the planning or a lot of the transition planning by the Republican administration that's leaving. I think the Republicans are probably going to become far more fiscally conscious. They're going to start talking about having to be, you know, concerned about budgets, and we'll see how this moves forward. I hate to say, I know I sound very ambivalent there, but a lot of times I think, you know, the vaccines and testing's a big deal. I think the stimulus payments are a big deal. I think people want to see that, but I'm waiting to see Friday, Monday on what they actually start laying out.
Well, you know, the Biden administration, his team can look and say, we know what the unemployment numbers are. We know what the COVID numbers are. There's some information they have access to. What kinds of things are worrying you about the transition here? What kind of what are the issue areas where you think they might not have this information that's going to slow them down or maybe make them change direction once they do get a look at this stuff?
I think the Trump administration has been burrowing in a lot of people into the bureaucracy who are going to probably be very recalcitrant and unhappy with the change. Just the things I've seen with, you know, really not wanting to be forthcoming with numbers. The thing that came out about what's worrying me, honestly, is the things like what we saw when the Trump administration recently said we're going to release more coronavirus, and we found out that they didn't have any more coronavirus vaccines to release. And I'm a little worried we're going to be a little like the Wizard of Oz, and we're going to open up the curtain and see that there's not much behind that curtain. And that's what's troubling me. And I'm just a little worried about it, honestly.
Turning to the cabinet, another agenda item for the Senate. Are there particular confirmation efforts that you have your eye on that are either really significant in the job that people are going to be doing or that might run into controversy before the Senate?
Well, what I'm expecting to see is with the Democratic Party's gain of those two seats from Georgia, that means the Senate flipped. And what that means is that I'm expecting to see some more nominees coming from Joe Biden that are actually far more progressive and more liberal than would have otherwise been. That's my expectation. Because if he was going to have to send people through and negotiate with a Republican Senate, he was going to have more moderate conservatives to get them through. Whereas now with a democratically controlled Senate, you're going to see probably a few nominees with a hat tip towards the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. That's my guess. This afternoon, I was seeing some of the nominees, Joe Biden's, some of the nominees that he's putting forward so far, they're looking very, very well received by both parties. I don't see anybody so far that they're going to really dig in and you're going to see some sort of death match over.
We're talking to Shannon O'Brien, assistant professor of instruction at the University of Texas, Austin, looking at the early policy priorities for the Biden administration. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your hopes, and your fears from the new administration when it takes office tomorrow afternoon. What do you want to see Congress work with the new president on? Do you want to see a new economic recovery package? The Biden team saying $1.9 trillion right now would include stimulus checks. That also includes efforts to help the vaccination program. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with political scientist Shannon O'Brien from the University of Texas, Austin, looking at the incoming Biden administration's first days starting tomorrow. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think the top priority should be for the Biden administration? Let's go to your calls now. Ed is with us in Milwaukee. Ed, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to ask about, Ed?
You know, I'm thinking about it. If it was my job, you know, it seems to me like this COVID thing is the number one priority, although, you know, I agree that we need to take care of this, the problems with the Trump administration. But if this thing gets sort of hand, it's like it's worldwide, and it's changing. So, you know, I just want to know if she thinks that possibly that should be the number one priority. Plus, when people don't have any money and they, you know, getting evicted and things like this, then that's going to snowball the effect of that. So I just wonder what your guest thinks about that.
Ed, thanks a lot for the call. So when it comes to COVID and the vaccination effort, Shannon, do you think there's much the Biden administration could do day one or day one through 10 to move the needle? Shannon? I think we've lost contact with our guest. While we will check in on that in just a moment, remind you, you can join in with your thoughts, what you want to see for priorities for the Biden administration. You can call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. The Biden administration takes office at early tomorrow afternoon, and we want to hear your thoughts for what you want to see for the top priorities. There's the impeachment going on. They won't be directly involved in that. But what do you want to see when it comes to economic recovery, if anything? Are there things you think Congress and the new president could work on together, things they can cooperate on? If so, what do you want that to be? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's bring on a caller while we wait to reconnect with our guest. Cindy is with us in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. I would like to see another big stimulus package for the middle class and the lower income people. I'd say double or triple that. And the easiest way to pay for that is to stop subsidizing the fossil fuel industry and you start making corporations and rich people pay their fair share in taxes. And that would eat that deficit up in no time.
Cindy, thanks a lot for calling in at 800-642-1234. The Biden plan would include a $1,400 stimulus check. Again, that would have to be passed by Congress. Don't start spending that money just yet. Kind of rounding up from the $600 to the $2,000 that some, including President Trump, had wanted. We've got Shannon back there. Sorry we lost you there, Shannon. Our initial caller had asked about vaccination as a priority. Are there things that you think the Biden administration can really do to move the needle early on speeding up vaccination efforts?
I think absolutely. I think one of the problems that we've had is a lack of coordination with the national government and the states. And there's been a lot of states, you're go for it. You're a bit on your own here. And I think there's a lot they could do to try to create a better supply chain, to try to improve communication, and to really create sort of a system where everybody has, a lot of people are really good if they have expectations and they know when things are supposed to occur. And I think if the Biden administration could really take point and really manage this as like, we're going to coordinate all this, I think that would go a long way to making things a lot better.
And then we heard from our last caller, Cindy, looking for a bigger stimulus. Now, the Biden plan, again, it would have to pass Congress, would do $1,400 checks. That's on top of the $600 in the last one, which would get up to the $2,000 that many Democrats in Congress, a couple Republicans, and then President Trump late in the game said they wanted. What do you think about the appetite in Congress, Shannon, for more direct stimulus payments?
I think it's going to be very polarized. I suspect, I mean, the tone that we're starting to see from the Republican Party is talking more and more in terms of fiscal, fiscal responsibility. We're starting to see them talk more like that. So I think they might be very uncomfortable passing more, or at least putting the blame of like increasing deficit or increasing debt onto the Democratic Party. But I think the increased stimulus is necessary. I think there's a lot of people struggling out there. I think there's a lot of people, honestly, most countries, you know, we're talking about a $1,400 one-time payment additional to people. In many countries, they're getting that each month. And, you know, $1,400, $600 is great to help maybe help pay a bill like this month. But when we're talking a total payment, that's not sufficient for a lot of people, and especially people who are in service industries and people who are in jobs that have been heavily impacted by this and they can't work right now. And I think that the administration is going to need to, I think they need to look at that and they need to take that up.
Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Jake is with us in Madison. Jake, hi.
Hi, hello.
What did you want to bring up, Jake?
What I wanted to bring up is that the Biden administration, if they're looking at any chances of getting reelected in 2024 or passing the torch over to Kamala, what they got to do, at least in my opinion, is they got to go full FDR, go full populist, and they got to materially improve people's circumstances, especially right now in this time of economic suffering. So what I think they should do is, for the pandemic, recurring payments, they should cover people's salaries that they would otherwise have, not just do a one-time check like we've been proposing. And with healthcare, which is especially on the table because of COVID, you got to go Medicare for all. You got to go single payer like so many other developed nations have. Otherwise, there's going to be people left behind. And if they want to pass the torch down to Kamala or get reelected in 2024, you can't half measure it. That's what I got to say.
Jake, thanks a lot for the call. Jake saying go all the way there, Shannon. In effect, what do you think?
Well, it sounds great on one level. On the other level, you know, we got to figure out how to pay for it, though, too. The United States budget, when we talk a lot about money, the discretionary isn't that big. We have a lot of mandatory payments that we've got to pay. And if we do that, it's going to eat even more into the discretionary spending, and it's going to have to come out from somewhere. And that fight, fortunately, is bigger and badder than I am. I don't have to weigh into that one, at least with in terms of actually having to figure that one out. But I think there's something to be said there. I mean, what the New Deal really did is the New Deal was not designed as a permanent program. The New Deal was designed as a temporary program to put people to work, to get people working in the government in various industries across the board to keep them from starving and to make sure they had food on their table. I think the Biden administration may be well served from looking at from that perspective of the New Deal and looking at maybe trying to figure out ways to put people back to work in public works projects and in various different avenues. I mean, the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, you know, whenever you walk, you know, into a park and you look at all the trees, a lot of those trees were planted by people who were unemployed in the 1930s.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Jackie now in Appleton. Jackie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Two things, I suppose. One thing, if we're looking for money and where to pull it from, I think the military would be a good spot, as well as I'm a huge Sanders fan, so rob the rich to feed the poor, right? There's plenty of people who have way too much money. But that's not the reason, I guess, I called in. I was just commenting because of the last call. I'm thinking big picture here. I don't care who's in office, right? Hierarchy of needs. What are people's needs? Generally speaking, we need a planet to survive on. So environmental would probably be first on my list. We need to stay alive. So food, farming type of industries that give us the food that we need. Third would probably be healthcare, followed up by maybe education. I mean, we need to think big picture for long-term effects. There are some serious things happening now that also need to be dealt with. But if we want to not have other issues carry on into the future, we have to see further in advance as well.
Jackie, thanks for the call. Shannon, to Jackie's first point about the environment, I understand the Biden administration looking at some executive orders aimed at overturning some of what President Trump has done. What are you watching for there?
Well, I actually think probably one of the first big fights is going to be over what we refer to often as the Green New Deal, and seeing that came out of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, and we'll see if that gets taken up or not. If the more conservative side of the Democratic Party wants to put the brakes on it, because now that they have a unified Congress and unified control, theoretically they could pass that. And we're going to see if the Democratic Party is truly on board, or was that lip service? I think we're going partially going to see.
Thanks a lot for that call. Our last 30 seconds, Shannon, what questions are you hoping we have answered over the next few days?
The next few days. I think I'm interested in COVID, like many people, like several people mentioned. I'm curious to see what they're going to really roll out there in terms of a comprehensive plan. I am curious on what they're going to be passing as executive orders immediately afterwards. I am curious to see what the timeline is on the impeachment trial. Because we've never tried to impeach a president or hold a trial for removal after he's left office. And I think that we might see that go into the courts possibly too and see if that's even possible. That's what
Shannon,
I'm looking at.
Shannon, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm sorry my system had an issue.
No problem. That's Shannon O'Brien, assistant professor of instruction at the University of Texas Austin Department of Government. She joined us for a look at the early days of the Biden administration. Coming up, we'll check in with two racial justice organizers from the Milwaukee and Kenosha areas about the work they've done over the last year and what they're hoping for in 2021. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will be sworn in as the next president and vice president of the United States. Join us for live NPR coverage from the U.S. Capitol starting at 10. That's live inauguration coverage tomorrow morning at 10 on Wisconsin Public Radio and online at WPR.org. Now, tens of thousands of people around Wisconsin demonstrated this summer in support of racial justice, police reform, and to make the statement that Black Lives Matter. The marches may not be as big or be getting the same headlines lately, but community leaders are still doing a lot of the same work, advocating for police accountability, reallocating city budgets, and finding ways to support neighbors in need of food, supplies, or work. We're checking in with two of those organizers right now, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you take part in any of the marches during the last year? Have you found ways to keep making a difference? Do you have thoughts, hopes to see changes in the way cities, local governments do their budgets, the way they run their police departments? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Mariah Smith is a community organizer in Milwaukee with the group The People's Revolution. Mariah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. Thank you so much.
And Portia Bennett-Bay is a Kenosha-based organizer and founder of the community group United as One. She was named one of Time Magazine's Guardians of the Year in 2020. Portia, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mariah, let's start with you. The People's Revolution was a big organizer of marches in and around Milwaukee this summer. The media maybe isn't following things as closely. The marches may not be as big. But what have you been working on in the meantime?
So, I mean, of course, you know, we've been marching. I think today is day 235. I think today is day 235 of consecutive action. 236 of consecutive action. So we've just been doing, you know, food drives. We've been doing canvassing. There's been a COP grant that's been that's been circulating through Milwaukee right now, and we were advocating for the older people to say no to that COP grant. So we've been doing a lot of work behind that, a lot of work behind the families, Joel Acevedo, Dontre Hamilton, Alvin Cole, things up with the family. So just been doing a lot of work throughout the city, as well as, you know, common council meetings, all of the things that it takes to get some change. So that we've just been busy in the last 236 days.
And Portia, what have you been focusing on in Kenosha?
Pretty much getting a lot of the laws changed, focusing on who we're going to have running for upcoming elections here in Kenosha for, like, the aldermen's county board and, what is it, state senate in November, and helping the communities out with getting food and, like, household care packages given out to the people, helping them find jobs and things of that nature.
And Mariah, I understand your organization has been working on helping people to run for local office. So what kind of things are you doing? Mariah? I think we might have lost our connection with Mariah. Portia, I want to ask.
Sorry about that.
There you are. Okay.
Sorry about that. I'm sorry. What you said? What
Getting people to run for office. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've had a lot of we actually do work with some state representatives, which have been guiding us. Some of the people that we do have that are marching with us every day, who just have that spunk, that fire that actually takes, you know, to run for office. But then also, you know, they have that unwavering spirit when they want to, and when they're fighting for the people. So we've actually just been working with people that are in current office right now that currently walk with us, people that have just different connections as far as political, Tiffany Henry, David Bowen, Jonathan, but we've just a lot of different people that we've been reaching out to and who have been just guiding us through, guiding some of the people that we have who want to fill those shoes, fill those seats, walking through those. So that's kind of what we've been doing.
And Portia, I've seen in interviews, you've said you did not plan on taking on a role in your life as an organizer in your community. What led you to where you are now?
I started protesting when the George Floyd situation happened, and it was pretty much, you know, getting people to stand up for what was right. And then I got fully involved once the Blake shooting happened. And like I said before, you know, I didn't expect to be in it full time, but that first night was like a dangerous situation to where I had to choose, you know, my life or a job, and I chose to do what was right because, one, I'm a mother, I'm a sister, I'm a daughter, you know, that could have been anyone in my family. So I just decided, you know, enough was enough, and decided to just go full-fledged with it. And working alongside some of the people from TPR and some of the people from All of Us or None, people here in Kenosha, BMW, so many other organizations. It's been a pleasure, you know, because we've gotten some things established here in Kenosha. We've gotten, you know, transparency, which is something we didn't have at first, you know. So doing a lot of that work, and then not just protesting, but being involved in these county board meetings and stuff like that has kind of gotten us a little farther than what we expected. And so it was just, you know, it was pretty much, if this is what I'm going to do, I have to go all in. So that's what I had to choose.
We're talking to Portia Bennett Bay from Kenosha, an organizer, founder of the community group United as One, and Mariah Smith, organizer in Milwaukee with the group The People's Revolution, looking at what they've been working on in their activism, their efforts to organize communities for racial justice. Mariah, can you talk about support you've seen from the community, maybe even outside of the group you work with immediately? What do you hear from people across Milwaukee?
It's overall, it depends where we are. You can go to Germantown. You can go to Waukesha. You can go to Menominee Falls, where it's not a lot of support. Those are where there's a lot of racist people that live out there. They really don't want to see us coming through those cities. The cops treat us a lot different. So we've definitely just made sure that we just definitely made sure that the work that we're doing is just, I'm so sorry. What did you ask me again? I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
Just what you're hearing. No, you were answering the question. What you're hearing from other people, other communities in the Milwaukee area.
Just make sure I was going the right way. But yeah, yep. I think in the Milwaukee area, we're, you know, in the 53206, 53215, those area codes, there's a lot of support. In Tulsa, when we first went out there, I'm sure you guys have heard about serial killer cop Joseph Mensa, who took three black and brown men's lives in the 5 years that he was in Tulsa. So when we first started marching out there, honestly, the responses were, get out of this neighborhood, go back to where you came from. You guys don't belong here. We did have some support, but it wasn't like, you wouldn't say Tulsa is a welcoming place. I'm not going to say Tulsa is a welcoming place currently, but it actually has been from the work that we've done. We've protested in that city probably over 60 to 70 days. So they've gotten to know us, understood where we were coming, understood our stances, understood that we weren't going anywhere until our voices were heard. And not in an aggressive manner. Sometimes, you know, you got to get loud. But understanding where we're coming from. So now we actually have, you know, different coalitions. We have a coalition that we're in with Wauwatosa. So now we're actually starting to kind of see a different level of support that we have seen in the past. I feel like it's currently a lot of people that weren't choosing a side. They kind of have to now, especially with everything that kind of happened on, I think, last Tuesday. So the Capitol. So yeah, it's the support has definitely become a bit more natural, normal. It's more frequent now where we go. Besides those few places, Waukesha, Menominee Falls, Germantown, those places are really rough, really rough. You really don't want to drive out there. Muskego, Muganago, those places, you really want to drive out there. DWB, driving while black. You don't want to do that, especially not at night. So, yeah, that's kind of how the support has been.
We're talking with Mariah Smith with the Milwaukee group, The People's Revolution, and Portia Bennett Bay, founder of the Kenosha group, United as One, talking about work they're doing on issues like racial justice, police reform, and community support. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you take part in any of the rallies, the marches, the protests related to Black Lives Matter last year? Are you still involved in those efforts? Did you have questions for our guests about the work they are doing? What do you see happening in your own community? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Mariah Smith from Milwaukee and Portia Bennett Bay of Kenosha about their work in the racial justice movement, ongoing organizing efforts. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll bring out a caller now. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This kind of makes me angry, you know. What happened over the summer was a lot of domestic terrorism. There were people that were taking over buildings, who were taking over streets and using the threat of violence in order to get a political decision or political changes. Some of those changes I agree with, And I would tell your guests is I'm one of the people that you want to reach and change minds on, and I'm there with you on a lot of issues. But when you call an entire city, Germantown, racist, you expect people to listen to you? It's just not going to happen.
Steve, thanks for calling in. Mariah, let's start with you responding to that. First of all, you did say you wanted non-violent protests. What would you say to someone who shared Steve's concerns, though, about some of what you're saying, putting people off?
Yeah, of course. Hey, Steve, I think that's what your name is, Steve. You said the name Steve, right?
That's right.
All right. Say, hey, guys, how's it going? So maybe your whole city is not racist. But we came to Germantown. We posted that we're gonna be out meeting at a park. Before we even got to start our protest, we were met by the police. Okay. We began to walk and we were trailed. We were told we couldn't walk certain ways, which is our right to protest. It's our right to protest. We weren't violent. We weren't aggressive. We were chanting. We're singing, we ready for change. That's what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? We're chanting for change. We're marching. Not aggressive. But we're marching down the street. We actually get stopped by the police, who tells us we can't go a certain way. While this is happening, one of the Germantown residents decides to come out of her house. And what does she do? She actually attacked one of our protesters, smacking her phone out of her hand. This is a white protester. It was a white woman and a white protester. So a black woman intervenes to try to break them up. And guess who got arrested? Steve, I got a question for you. Guess who got arrested?
Steve is off the line now, so you can go ahead and answer your question. Sorry.
Well, I'll answer it for you, Steve. The black woman was arrested. So in that instance, the only person who did not have any type of, she wasn't in the altercation at all, besides trying to defuse the situation, she was arrested. So when I say Germantown is racist, and I say Maguanago is racist, and I say that all these cities are racist, I'm referring to the police and a lot of the citizens that live there, residents that live there, because a lot of the times they don't stand up with us, who were marching through these streets, not aggressively. Like I said, I'm not sure if you heard the part where I said Tulsa didn't agree with us at first, but now it's an overwhelming, welcoming feeling when we go out there, because they have gotten to know us and they understand where we're coming from. We're fighting for our lives at this point. We're not fighting to not wear masks or fighting because Trump didn't win the election. We're fighting because we want to live. We want to go on jogs. We want to be able to sleep in our beds. That's what we're fighting for. So when we're marching through these streets, we're not aggressive. Come march with the People's Revolution. I can assure you that it's going to be a different type of feeling. If you're on the right side, it's going to be a different type of feeling, a feeling that you've never felt, because this is a group, as well as the people in Kenosha, these are groups of people who want the same thing, and that's literally just to live.
I want to bring Portia in here. I'm looking at your United as One Facebook page, and with the reaction when the announcement came that the announcement was going to come over charging officers in the Jacob Blake shooting, you're very specifically, you shared a thing saying we are calling for nonviolence in the reaction to that. Can you talk about the importance to you of nonviolent protest?
First and foremost, to address Steve, I mean, to say you're upset about what they choose to put on their radio station, you have a choice to not listen, not to sound disrespectful. Secondly, you can't sit here and put protesters and rioters in the same category. It has been proven multiple times of who are domestic terrorists and who are peaceful protesters. And I have, like I said, worked side by side with TPR, where they've came to Kenosha and protested with us. And it was peaceful. We didn't get the decision we wanted for Jacob, but yet and still, we were peaceful. We didn't destroy anything. And the very next day, what happened at the Capitol? They destroyed buildings and people were killed, attacked a police officer. So if you want to categorize people, make sure you have it correctly. We are peaceful protesters. We let it be known that we don't want violence. We always state nonviolence. But because people are chanting and marching in the street, that is our right, legally. So if you're going to get mad at us for abiding by the law that is given, get mad at the ones who created that. But that is our right. So to say those were domestic terrorists, not everyone that comes out there are the domestic terrorists. There were people here that burned down our neighborhoods and car lots and buildings. They weren't with the peaceful ones, though. Those people chose to do what they did on their own. And we live off of that. We ask for nonviolence every single time. You know why? Because community leaders such as TPR and the rest of us get blamed for it, and we're not the ones involved with it. So to say those were domestic terrorists is, no. You got to learn to separate the two, because we've shown numerous times where there is a difference between a protester and a domestic terrorist. Look what happened in D.C. Those were domestic terrorists. People who burned down these buildings, those were domestic. They did what they did. People who protest and do chant, those are not domestic terrorists. Those are normal, everyday people utilizing their First Amendment rights. That's what those people are. Now, when you guys have your protests about school boards and don't want to wear face masks and don't want to, you know, union protests and things like that, are we, so we can say you guys are domestic terrorists because you want to protest with signs, right or wrong? You guys got to learn to stop categorizing us with everyone else, because that's not how we live. We do for our community. We uplift our fellow humanity. We build our community. We help each other in these communities. Domestic terrorists don't do that.
We're talking to Portia Bennett Bay from Kenosha, Mariah Smith from Milwaukee, community organizers in those cities. I want to take just a minute with each of you and ask, what's one change you're hoping to accomplish in 2021 in your community? Mariah, let's start with you.
One change that we're looking to change, I mean, obviously it's to simply justice for these families. We actually hold a lot of marches where there are families that are still fighting for justice, where the names are not really known. So Corey Stingley, I'll say. I'm going to say Dontre Hamilton. I'll say Joel Acevedo, Derek Williams. These are names that are still, these families are still fighting for justice. So that is what we're, you know, seeing, trying to see directly. And obviously, no more families losing children or family members to police brutality. So holding these officers accountable is a big thing as well. So just really honestly finding a better solution for us as Black and brown people.
And Portia, in our last minute, what you're looking to see change in 2021?
The seats in legislative. If we can get a lot of those seats changed, a lot of laws will be changed. Even with having the election, like I said, with senators and all of that, because their role is to be the voice of the people. And some of them have not been doing that. And I'm not the type to sit back and just shy away from it just because you have a title. That title means nothing to those of us who are on the ground every day and got to hear the cries of our people on a regular basis. So getting these seats changed to where we will actually have people that are in the best interest of the people and actually do their part. Because if it wasn't for the people, they wouldn't be where they are.
We'll leave it there for now. Thanks to both of our guests, Portia Bennett Bay, founder of the Kenosha Community Group United as One, and Mariah Smith, organizer with the Milwaukee group The People's Revolution. They talked to us about their organizing work in their respective communities. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 7, social media played a big role in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol in radicalizing some participants, advance planning, and in coordinating in real time. Kate Archer Kent and her guests look at the role of social media in the chaos. That's tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then the last year has been a tough year for our mental health across the country and here in Wisconsin. A psychologist from UW Health joins the show with advice on how to check in on our mental well-being and how to take steps, maybe small steps, to help us feel better. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.